The arrival of August means football is very near. This is the Todd Wright Toddcast. We're approaching episode 350 of the Todd Wright Toddcast. So thank you. Whether you are new or recent or have been listening for a long time or even listening to me before I jumped into the podcast world from previously being in traditional radio, or you watch me on television on Spectrum Bay News 9 in Tampa Bay or Spectrum News 13 in Orlando / Central Florida. Thank you very much. I really appreciate it. Allow me to mention my sponsors so they pay for this podcast so you don't have to. Brandon Legal Group, your full-service law firm, servicing the greater Tampa Bay area. If you reside in the state of Florida and you are an adult male and have been paying permanent alimony, the law has been on your side for over 2 years now. The law changed on July 1st, 2023. Permanent alimony was eliminated from state of Florida law. You can not stop paying it on your own, but the law's on your side, and your future payments can be reduced or eliminated altogether. Brandon Legal Group can help you in this area. It's one of many things they offer as part of being a full-service law firm servicing the greater Tampa Bay area. For a free consult, visit brandonlegalgroup.com or call 813-902-3576. Brandon Legal Group, your full-service law firm. Plantation Palms Golf Club will host Todd Wright Tour 52 later this calendar year, an event that I have not put on sale. I have not announced the date. I'm still on summer break. I don't host golf events between Memorial Day and Labor Day anymore for weather concerns. But we will be back at Plantation Palms Golf Club, which means I get to work with the great Jesse Pratt, who is the general manager of Plantation Palms Golf Club. And he not only takes care of me and my golfers, but he cares about every aspect of this property. They have a 18-hole par 72 championship course with new tee boxes on 7 and 17. They have a fully lit driving range for you to use, which comes in real handy when we hit that time change later in the year and suddenly it's dark at 5:30 in the afternoon. He has redone the mini golf, and it seems to be a pet project for him, and it's awesome. And he has monthly mini golf tournaments for cash. And it's not like you have to show up at the same time as everybody else. You can just play and turn in your scorecard to win money. He's also done a lot with the food and beverage. With Mulligan Sports Pub, I had dinner there with a couple of friends who have no interest in golf at all. They just like going for the food, the service, the view, the location at Plantation Palms Golf Club. Check it out for all the reasons I gave, or special events or trivia night. They have a lot of those things as well. Visit plantationpalms.net. You can also check out tee times on that website. Email write.todd@yahoo.com, write.todd@yahoo.com. If it's golf related, shoot it to me at toddwrightgolf@gmail.com. Thanks to recent emails from listeners like Tony, Greg, trying to think of Sean's always listening, sending me podcast thoughts and ideas. You can get on that regular list as well to let me know what you like, what you don't, what you want me to talk about. Let me see how quickly I can hit on a few things here. I'm trying to make these podcasts more manageable for you to listen to. They'd be easier for me to do if I could shorten the length of doing them. So it's an ongoing thing for me. It's difficult to do, but I will try. Don't talk a ton of baseball on this podcast, but one deep dive I went on recently came out of a trivia night that I went to at the Brass Tap in Carrollwood on Northdale Mabry, meeting some wonderful friends a week ago. And the sports question, one of two, the other was NASCAR related. The other question was, in what year, in what calendar year, did Major League Baseball have both Ted Williams being the last player to hit 400 and Joe DiMaggio to have a 56-game hitting streak that still stands as the longest in Major League Baseball history. And for some reason, and I hadn't thought about this in a while, I just looked at my friends and I said, I'm just thinking 1941 for some reason. It was right. And I don't think a lot of people got it, but I did. And the interesting part of that is I went back and looked at some things from the 1941 baseball season. That Ted's the last 400 hitter from that year, and Joe DiMaggio's streak, which has only been challenged since by Pete Rose getting to 44 before the Atlanta Braves and Gene Garber at the end shut him down. Another reason why Rose turned down free agency to go and be on the Superstation with a very lucrative deal from Ted Turner. When Rose finally hit free agency and left the Reds, he went to the Phillies instead. I found something fascinating, so fascinating, that I even reached out to an old colleague of mine at ESPN and Tim Kirkchen. Tim's well described by my longtime producer, Louise Cornetta, as a good egg. He not only loves baseball, he communicates baseball well, he's an ambassador for the game. He's just a really good guy. I haven't talked to Tim in forever. I enjoy his podcast and his clips on social media that he does with his son. His son sounds like him. It's a fun listen. They have good guests because the players they get on to talk to them, or in the case of Tony Gwynn's son, it's fun. It's hilarious, and it's very informative. So I reached out through Louise, and I said, hey, can I get in touch with Kirkchen? And she sent me his number. I sent him a note. He got back to me and actually called me from the Hall of Fame weekend, last weekend, and said he remembered me. He was very kind. And I just asked for an opinion on an obscure name, and he knew immediately who I was talking about. So from the 1941 baseball season, if I were to tell you that Ted Williams, that was the year Ted Williams hit 400, and the batting average actually goes up because Ted had six sac flies that worked against him then. The sac fly counted as an at-bat in 1941. I think the rule was changed in 47 or 48. And DiMaggio's 56-game hitting streak. So you would think, wow, since 1941 was the last year for those two guys to do those things that have never been done in baseball again, either Ted or Joe, I've said Joe DiMaggio, right? Not Mickey Mantle. Joe DiMaggio must have led the American League in hitting, in total hits. The answer is no. A Washington senator named Cecil Travis that year led the league in hits with 218. It's amazing to me that in one of baseball's most historic years, for Ted Williams hitting 400 and for DiMaggio hitting in 56 straight games, Cecil Travis from the Washington Senators had more hits than either of them for the 1941 season at 218. Yeah. Ted had 185, by the way, as one number. So I looked at why I never heard of Cecil Travis before. He was a shortstop, middle infielder, because I guess he would occasionally play second base, and there were times he played maybe third or left field. He drove in 101 that year. He walked 52 times. They walked Ted 147, by the way. Travis only played in 9 more games than Ted Williams, 152 to 143. So why don't we know more about him? Is it because he played for the Washington Senators, who, of course, later moved to Minnesota? It's because, and Tim talked about this to me as well, after that 41 season, Travis went to serve in the war. Ted later did too. I think Ted went in 43. But Travis went immediately after he led the league in 1941. He went to serve our country. And he was gone for a few years. And in one case, he got frostbite so bad that the medical opinions wanted to amputate one or both of his feet. He refused, and he rehabbed, and he came back, and he played, but he was never the same player. So I just wanted to share a stunning revelation that was endorsed by when I asked Tim Kirchen about Cecil Travis, not Ted Williams, not Joe DiMaggio, leading the league in 1941 in hits with 218 before he went off to serve our country, only to return, I think the 46 season, 45, he might have returned for the 1945 season or 46 season. But the frostbite and spending those years serving our country, he was never the same player after that. He's overlooked for his accomplishment in 1941 because of what Ted Williams did in batting average and what Joe DiMaggio did in hit streak that have never been done since. How about this? There's a Georgia Sports Hall of Fame. It is considered one of the better state Hall of Fames in our country. I've never been, but I reached out to a communications director, looked at their inductees and what have you. Travis is a member of the Georgia Sports Hall of Fame because his roots were in the state of Georgia. The year he was inducted into the Georgia Sports Hall of Fame, he went in the same induction class as Hank Aaron. So Kirchen's reaction when I told him that was, story of this guy's life, just overshadowed by others, whether it was Ted and Joe in the 41 season, or even when he was enshrined into a state sports hall of fame, and Hank Aaron is in that class for all the years that Hank held Major League Baseball's all-time home run mark. So just sharing something there that I thought was really interesting. And I may dig a little more on my own to find out more about Cecil Travis, overlooked, overshadowed, league hit leader in 1941. All right, so in doing some TV this week for Spectrum, Bay News 9 in Tampa Bay, and Spectrum News 13 in Central Florida, they asked me to do a segment on USF football and Alex Golish. And I'll spare a lot of that here because I just want to bring up the point, if I haven't already, about we've reached a point with NIL deals. Many used to call college football, a minor league for the NFL. It's now even more that because Ohio State just won a national championship by winning four games in an expanded playoff, literally with the largest payroll in college football of an estimated $20 million. As we stand here right now, Arch Manning is the highest paid in terms of NIL value player in college football for 2025 until further notice. quarterback for the University of Texas, the nephew of Eli and Peyton. So we reach more and more of a point now where college football is almost a level of, there's compensation out there for players via NIL. And there's obviously the better programs from the better conferences are the ones getting the best talent. So when I heard recently that the American Athletic Conference rebranded itself, and you know, they threw a lot of money at Vern Lundquist there for a while. They would put P6 on their first down markers to say, oh, it's a real, it's college football's a power six. We're the sixth conference. They've rebranded themselves. Yet Memphis just waived $200 million at the Big 12. The Big 12. Not the Big 10. Not the SEC. The Big 12. To say, save us. Get us the hell out of this conference. And the Big 12 said no. That's how much of a challenge it is for the conference and the teams in the conference, because they are basically playing minor league college football compared to what is going on with the SEC, the Big 10, and to a lesser extent, the Big 12, the ACC, and we'll see what the newly reformed Pac-9/Pac-10-12 will have for this. The American had six players worth an NFL draft pick in 2025. I'll give that to you again. The American had six players that the NFL, the 32 NFL franchises, felt were worth a draft pick in 2025. Six. 32 NFL teams, seven rounds, six players from the entire American Conference were worth a draft pick. 15 from the SEC in the first round alone. Yeah. That's the difference. If you want to watch the best in college football, you watch the SEC, the Big Ten, and to a lesser extent, some of the Big 12, ACC, and we see what happens with the newly formed. You're not watching the American Conference. These are all schools looking to get out of the American Conference. As the American Conference, I don't know what they're doing. USF has not had a player worth an NFL draft pick in nearly 2,000 draft picks. The last player USF had selected in the fifth round of the 2018 NFL draft is Marquez Valdez-Scantling, and he turns 31 in October. That's all you need to know about USF football and where it is. Pretty much like everybody in that conference right now. They're not playing the same game as the SEC, the Big Ten, and other power conferences that have actual talent to play the game at the highest level. Last thing I want to share here, and this also comes from some research off TV. I'm going to give you the last 4 years of the NFL playoffs, and I'm just going to give you by year who lost on their home field in the playoffs. So much of, here are your goals every year in the NFL. make the playoffs, preferably win your division to assure you of at least one home playoff game. And if you really reach high goals, you're the number one seed in your conference and you earn the only first round bye. That means if you earn a first round bye, you don't play the first week of the playoffs. In the second week, you are guaranteed a playoff game against the lowest remaining seed that survived the previous week. And if you win that, you're on your home field. And if you to win to get to the Super Bowl, it sets up pretty well. In 2021, so these are the playoffs that were played in January 2022, five teams actually lost home playoff games: Dallas, Green Bay, Tampa Bay, Tennessee, Kansas City. Yes, Kansas City lost the AFC title game at home. I'm sorry. Yes, they did. Kansas City lost the AFC title game at home to the Cincinnati Bengals, who also took out Tennessee that year. Tennessee may have been the number one seed. I think they were. In the next year, 2022 season, Buffalo, Tampa Bay, Minnesota all lost on their home field in the postseason. In 2023, Dallas, Buffalo, and Baltimore lost on their home field in the postseason. Of note here, Buffalo and Baltimore both lost to Kansas City, which a lot of the attention that year was on Andy Reid and Mahomes and Kelce and company, because the Chiefs, for the first time, were going to have to go on the road to get to the Super Bowl, and they were successful. And then last year, the Bucks and the Lions, only NFC teams, lost at home in the playoffs. No AFC team lost a home playoff game. So that's a total of 13 teams over the last four postseasons have lost at home in the playoffs. 13 games have been lost in the playoffs by the home team. The Bucks are the most. They lost at home in the 2021 NFL playoffs, the 2022 NFL playoffs, and the 2024 NFL playoffs. They were the only team to lose in the opening round. They can't use the Mahomes excuse the way Buffalo can for losing in the 2022 playoffs and the 2023 playoffs. And Dallas gets a lot of shit just because people like giving Dallas shit for their two home losses in the playoffs, 2021 to the Niners, 2023 to Green Bay. But the Bucks have more losses at home in the playoffs the last 4 years than any team in the NFL. So the good is they've won four division titles in a row. The bad is they're 1-3 on their home field in their last four home playoff games. They actually went 1-1 at home in the playoffs in 2021 when they lost to the Rams after Tom Brady brought the Bucs all the way back from a big deficit. Defending your home field is a big deal in the regular season. It earns you the right to do it and give you an advantage in the postseason. And the Bucks, the Bills, and the Cowboys have not taken advantage of that the last 4 years. And this just in, that's why over the last 4 years, the Bucks, Bills, and Cowboys have not reached the Super Bowl. The Bucks, like the Cowboys, the last 4 years have not even reached a conference title game. The Todd Wright Toddcast is presented by Brandon Legal Group and Plantation Palms Golf Club. Again, you can email me at wright.todd@yahoo.com. If it's golf related, then use toddwrightgolf@gmail.com. I wish you a good day, and I hope you will tune in to the next podcast.